This next speaker is a man who has spoken here before. Just a couple days ago, helped me with a presentation just yesterday afternoon during breakout session. He's back getting his final cup of coffee. Now, there's no such thing as a final cup of coffee with this guy. He's getting stoked up, ready to go. So for the final speaker today in the morning sessions on Hoshana Rabbah, I'd like to present to you Mr. Joseph Good.
Shalom, y'all. Boker Tov. Y'all know the response. You know what Boker Tov means? It means good morning. Didn't you? You know what you typically respond when somebody says Boker Tov? Boker Or. What does that mean? Light of the morning. Light of the morning. It's actually something that King David had said. But a word of caution: if you say Boker Tov wrong, you actually have not said good morning. You've said good cowboys. I'm from Texas, we can get away with it, but I don't know about you. What I'm going to talk about is community. My first message here dealt with Yom HaKahal, the day of the assembly, the day of the congregation. Community is something that's very, very difficult for us. And the reason it's difficult is because we live at so many different places. How many of you feel that you're kind of isolated? You're cut off. You have no one to fellowship with. And it's a major problem. It's an enormous problem. Because we need several things to grow, to become mature in our faith. We need, first off, to have good habits. We have to study. We don't get it by osmosis. We have to work. We have to be diligent. We have to study. We have to pray. We have to unlearn a tremendous amount. It's a matter of that if you picture it, when the children of Israel returned from Babylon, Jerusalem was in ruins. The gates had been burnt. The walls had been demolished. So for Debbie and I, through the years, one of our favorite books has been the book of Nehemiah or Nehemiah. And when we get in a hard spot, when we get where we're tired, where we feel that nothing is working out and everyone is against us and it couldn't get worse, we go to this book and it brings encouragement. Because it's a labor. You have to go in. You have to work. But one of the most difficult things is that feeling of isolation. You need good teaching, but you need fellowship. You need to have other peoples that are with you, that you can talk, you can discuss. Your neighbors, most of you probably have had some degrees. I did a teaching some time back called The War Against Judaism. And let me see how many of you have experienced this, that when you began to walk this walk, when you began to go this path, that your friends began moving away from you. Your family was in serious doubt about you and could be often critical and very hurtful. That a lot of your friends that you formerly had fellowship with would have nothing to do with you. You started encountering problems like, okay, I'm no longer keeping these festivals of Christmas and Easter and Halloween and all of these things. So now you had this vacancy, you had this void of what do I do? And then when you did reach that point of you knew what to do, many times you had to do it by yourself. And so that it's very hard. It's very difficult. Well, let me tell you, 30 years ago, it was much more difficult. We've come a long ways. We've come 30 years ago. You might not believe this. I'm going to guess that most of you have not been in this movement for 30 years. But 30 years ago, if you went in someplace and you said Yeshua, people looked at you like, what on earth are you talking about? Now if you say Yeshua, everybody knows. Everybody understands. We've come a long ways. Many times we can't see how far we've come. You know, I grew up with the expression, you can't see the forest for the trees. It's not a thing that you should be discouraged about. Is that we are growing, we are changing, and we are making progress. But I want to cover a few more aspects. Now we have a need for community more than we ever did. That is that this place is full of kids. I'm concerned for my child. I have an 11-year-old. I want her, when she grows up, to follow in our paths. I want her to have a husband that believes in Torah. I want her to have a husband that will work with her in observing God's Shabbat, in keeping the festivals, in setting up a kosher home, in knowing how to go into the Scriptures. And I know that many of you have the same concerns, is where do we get the mates for our children? We have a need for community. So we have a need for community on several levels. One is on a personal level, an isolation level. And second, we have on a greater scope of things across the board within this movement. Not only where we are, but where we're going. Now, in my area, let me give you a little bit of history. In the late 80s, I had a congregation, and it ranged in size from about 50 at its smallest to probably at its largest about 100 people. It's called Kehilat Tikvat Israel, and it was really good in many ways. Many things we've changed from where we were back then, and that's good because in 30 years, hopefully you've grown, you've changed, you're not the same as you were 30 years before. But I had to leave that congregation because that wasn't what I was called to. My calling was not to be, quote unquote, a pastor of a congregation and to work directly with people. It takes a special anointing from God for that. It takes a special person for that. My calling was to do the research that I do and to go around and to speak to people and to do various things. But I was gone a lot. I couldn't meet their needs. So we pulled out of the congregation. I literally had to depart from the congregation. Because, not that I disagreed with them, not that I had any problem with them, but the reality was that when I walked in the door, people turned from the leadership that was there after I left, and they looked to me for their answers and their questions. And it made a destabilizing element there. So we had to stay away. And the bottom result was, we had no community. We had nowhere to go in our own hometown, where there were numbers of other believers. We were isolated. We were cut off. And we learned how to do this. And in a way, it was very good because it caused us, for Debbie and I, to strengthen in ourselves, to develop our own Shabbat observance. It caused us to learn for ourselves numbers and numbers and numbers of things, but we have a desire for community. I don't want to go and establish another congregation. I don't believe that's my calling. I think that I would be disobedient to God if I were to go and establish another congregation, but I have a great desire for community. I want to see where we can come together with other believers and we can go through observance, we can go through discussions, we can go through any number of things and have that experience together. So, the first thing that I want to address is you yourself. You yourself. I was talking with a friend this morning, and he made a statement that the problem with teachers, with good teachers, is that when you get a good teacher, you get lazy. You want the teacher to do all the research. You want the teacher to tell you all the answers. You want the teacher to do everything, and then you just listen and nod your head. Now, the problem with this is you don't know what you believe, you know what he believes. Then when you have someone else come along, and they're a teacher, you don't have that maturity to make the discernment of what's good and what's not. So the first thing in establishing community starts with you. You have to take the steps in order to grow. You're going to have to go in and to read God's Word. You're going to have to learn not to just read it, but to read it in a most excellent way. To where that you study it. To where that, let me ask you something. How many of you have read through the Bible from the first verse to the last verse? I'm not going to ask how many haven't. But a number of people haven't raised their hands. Why not? Why not? A first step for a believer should be to read all of God's Word. That is the first step on your path. Second thing is that we have to unlearn a lot. And that's a difficult thing. We're afraid to do that. We hold on to things. And it's a difficult process. I can remember years ago, I could pray. Now, I'm going to tell you a real weakness with me. I can pray for someone who's sick. And I go in and I'll pray, I'll lay hands on them, I'll pray, and I'll pray a sincere prayer. I would pray for my mother. My mother just passed away, and I could pray a sincere prayer. But whenever I pray for God to teach me His Word, there's another level to that prayer. And I'm not saying this is a good thing. I should pray for people that are sick as fervently as I pray for God to teach me His Word. But I believe because of what God has called me to, I can get in and I can pray and pray and pray and pray that God would teach me something out of His Word. But I can remember a time that I would pray that God would teach me something, and in that same prayer, I would say, "Oh, I hope you don't." Have you ever experienced that? You want to change, you want God to teach you, but everything He teaches you is going to mean you have to give up something. You have to change. You have to conform to this. Now, in Pirkei Avot is this fantastic book. It's very similar to the Proverbs. It's the sayings of the fathers. These are very famous rabbis from in the first and second centuries common era. And chapter 5 is my favorite chapter. And it has all of these things that are really great illustrations. And it says there are 5 types of people that come to the house of study. 4 types of people, excuse me. 4 types of people that come to the house of study. Now the first is like a sponge. The second is like a funnel. The third is like a strainer. And the fourth is like a sieve. So the first, the sponge, that whatever they hear, they receive both good and bad. You don't want to be a sponge. The second, the funnel, is it comes in one ear and it goes out the other ear. It just keeps on going. Nothing seems to stick. The third is the strainer. It lets all the good teaching go through, and it keeps all the bad. The fourth, the sieve, is it filters out the bad, and it keeps the good. So one of the things that has to happen here is that we have to learn how to grow. We have to learn how to apply this to ourselves. Let me ask you, how many of you read Hebrew? Now, this is a Hebrew roots movement. How many of you believe or suspect that you're descended from the tribes of Israel? English isn't the language. Hebrew is the language. How many of you would like to learn Hebrew? How many of you have tried to learn Hebrew and failed miserably? Look at the numbers, okay? I have a system for you. See, here's the problem. You go and you sign up for a course. And you go take this course, and in a matter of 2 or 3 weeks, you're behind. Then you get overwhelmed, and you quit. Y'all know that that's what I'm saying. You have to say y'all, by the way. Everybody knows that that's what happens. Well, here's your goal. Your goal is, if you're wanting to read Hebrew, you're wanting to read God's Word. Isn't that really why you're wanting to read Hebrew, first off? Well, I want to show you something. I want to recommend a couple things, because I think that this is the first thing. In establishing community, the first thing we have to do is strengthen our own family. That's the number one thing. Don't try to go out and make a community till you got your own families act together. So, I think one of the greatest things that I've got this new thing I'm trying to promote with our people of getting husbands and wives to read the Torah together. To read it together. And I think that it is a fantastic way for them to come together, for them to start talking, and something miraculous begins to happen. Now, this is a book from Art Scroll. I don't sell Art Scroll books, okay? But this is called the Interlinear Chumash. This is the book of Genesis, and I'm going to show you why I like it. The Hebrew is very, very plain. It's very plain. It's easy to look at, it's easy to read, and right below it are the English words. And they, unlike many of your English transliterations or translations, interlinears, the English actually reads very smooth. So this, what I say to people, first off, is do not take a course. Don't take a course. Learn to say the Aleph Tav. Go through the alphabet in Hebrew. You should be able to do it in 1 minute. So what I'm talking about is that you can go Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, Vav, Zayin, Het, Tet, right on to the end. Know the vowel sounds. I don't care if you know the names of the vowels. Just know the vowel sounds. And then find out how to sound out a word. You can buy any number of books that are designed for children that will teach you how to sound out a word. By the time you sound out 5 words, you've got it down. Then, take a good interlinear and start reading in Genesis chapter 1. You'll read the first word, Bereshit. You'll read the second word, Bara. You'll read the third word, Elohim. And it might take you 10 minutes. To read those 3 words. And you might be awkward. You might mispronounce it a little bit. It doesn't matter. But you keep on reading. Let's say the husband reads verse 1 and the wife reads verse 2. And then the husband reads verse 3. What you'll find by the time you get to verse 3, you'll read verse 3 in a third of the time you read verse 1. By the time you get to the end of chapter 1, you'll be reading at a pretty, you'll see a major difference. Now, you won't know what you read. I don't care. I don't want you to know what you read. What I want you to do is start reading. And then you just keep reading, and you read all the way till you get to the end of the book of Bereishit. And then you read the book of Shemot. And then you read the book of Vayikra, or Leviticus, and what's going to happen in here is you will start picking up words. Now, I have a second thing that I'm going to suggest. There is a program that you can get. I didn't bring it up here. I could have shown you. But there is a program that is put out by Torah Educational Software. And you can go by our table, and we'll tell you how to get in touch with Torah Educational Software. Just type that in on your computer, Google. But you want to get a program that's called Word by Word, and they have one for Genesis, one for Exodus, one for Leviticus. Actually, there's one for every chapter of the book. Every book of the Bible. I hate reading off a computer. I just don't like it. I like reading out of a book. Okay, so I don't read Genesis chapter 1 from that computer program. It's on there, and I can take my cursor and put it on any word, and I can click on that word, and I'll hear an Israeli pronounce it. That helps. You're able to not guess about what the word sounds like. You're able to hear what the word sounds like. But here's what I like about the word by word is that they have what's called review words. And so you pick a chapter, like chapter 1 of Bereishit, and it will come up, and it has the word right here. The word is going to be up here at the top, and then it's going to have a multiple choice of four words, or four phrases or words, and you choose which one is the correct one. It's going to tell you how many words in that chapter. That's over the side, and have like a zero, and then a slash, and then the number of words, let's say 220. If you choose the right selection, it'll give you a one, and then it'll tell you you got that many words right out of that chapter. Now, above it, there's a little thing. I'm not going to explain how it works, but there's a set of little Torah scrolls, and every time you miss a word, you're going to lose a Torah scroll. So you only have so many words before you have to do it over. But here's the great thing, is that as you go through this little test, it's a game, and it's real kind of addictive. It's as addictive as solitaire and any of the computer games. You'll sit there and you'll just be going through, trying to get through that chapter, but you're learning vocabulary. You're learning the words. And pretty soon, by the time you get through five chapters, you have learned the majority of the common words. You start to recognize prefixes, suffixes. You start to be able to guess more accurately which one's the right answer. And then, after you've done all that for a few weeks, you and your wife, look at your marriage. Look at your family. Look at the things you're discussing in your house, because they're going to be the things of God rather than the problems of the world. And that's going to make a major spiritual change right off the bat that is absolutely fantastic. Now, then go take your course. Now, you won't be overwhelmed. Now, you can go and you can keep up with that class, and it's all in perspective. Good plan, huh? I like it. I'm having a blast with it. My goal this year is to read through the entire Tanakh in Hebrew. And I'm having the time of my life. It has just been a fantastic experience. Now let me go to our problem. Here's where Debbie and I are, is we don't want to establish a congregation, but we want the benefits of a congregation. We want to have people to come together. We want to go further in learning to use the liturgy. We want to go through I want to be able to pray the morning prayers, the Shacharit. I want to be able to pray the Mincha. I want to be able to do all the Sabbath prayers, all the festival prayers. I want to do a Passover Seder in Hebrew. I desire to do that because I believe with all my heart that we get so much from English, but when we look at it in Hebrew, we're going to get that much more. Okay, so I want to be able to develop that, but I need people. I need others with me in order to do it. So our problem is this. We live in Nederland, Texas. And we have, Monday nights I have Havara. And by the way, if you want to, I teach for 2 hours, 7 o'clock Texas time. If you want to listen in, just go to our website and click on Havara and you can listen in or watch it. And there's a thing that you can ask questions at the end. We have people come on a typical night. We have a family that drives from north of us about an hour to get there. They live up in the woods of southeast Texas. We have a lady that comes over from Silsby, Texas, about 45 miles away. We have a man that comes in from Houston. That's about, for him, about 3 hours drive. We have a family that comes from time to time from Willis, Texas. It's about 3 hours drive from them. In other words, it's impractical for us to have a congregation in the first place because everybody lives too far away. It's hard to come together. But what we did for Rosh Hashanah is we rented a building. We rented a building in a little community, a lakeside community, and they had a little hotel right there at it. How much were the rooms? $55? $55 for a room. And, I mean, it wasn't that much. But people were able to come before the Sabbath began. People could stay till after Rosh Hashanah was over. It was economical enough that once in a while people could afford this. And so what we're trying to do is to keep the Hagim, the festivals, where we come together as a community. Every couple of months we plan on doing this for the Shabbat. And so that people can drive a distance. And it doesn't cost an arm and a leg. I mean, you can actually find places where you can put up a tent. But the idea is that don't try, if it's not in your community that you have enough people, if you have to scatter out, get in touch with people here from your area. Right here at this festival, find out who's from your area, talk to them and say, hey, would y'all like to come together with us? We'll get together at some point in Hanukkah. And we'll do something together. Now, plan it out in this fashion. Plan it out to where that you are planning that not only are you going to come together and have a party, but you're going to do something that's going to take you further in the commandments. Because that's what we're going to have to do to grow. Is we have to go forward and we have to build upon our past foundations. And so, each time, and then look at Pesach. Look at look at Purim. Look at Pesach. Look at Shavuot. Look at set several times during the year that you're going to come together as a group. Maybe there's only 3 families, 4 families, but you're not alone. Come together and hold the Shabbat. Make it an agenda that on the Sabbath you're going to do certain things. Maybe you have songs you want to learn. Maybe you have blessings that you want to go into. Maybe you've never done the Birkat HaMazon, the grace after the meal, and you want to learn that. Take this opportunity. Let that be this platform for that happening. So, the first thing, I want to read you 2 passages. The first is found in the book of Daniel. And this is in chapter 11. It's talking about the time of the Maccabean warriors. The revolt against Antiochus Epiphanes the Fourth. It is the latter part of verse 32. It says, but the people who know their God shall be strong and carry out great exploits. The great exploits is actually not in the text. So let me read it to you that way. It says, but the people who know their God shall be strong and carry out. Notice the sequence. Number one is you have to know God. That means that you have to build your own relationship with God first. If you do this, you will be strong, and then you have to act. You have to carry out. I want to read a passage to you, a pasuk out of the book of 1 Chronicles. This is in reference to the building of the temple. I was talking with a friend this morning, and we looked at this verse, and a single word in here really struck a chord with me, and I want to share that with you. But it says, this is in reference to the building of the temple, and it says, see now, this is 1 Chronicles chapter 28, verse 10, see now that Hashem has chosen you to erect a building for the holiness, meaning the temple. Here's the part I want. Be strong and act. Be strong and act. We have to take initiative. We have to move forward. Now, the same word that is used here for be strong is the word that you say when you finish a book of the Torah, you say, Chazak, Chazak, Fenit, Chazak. Be strong and be very courageous. It's the same word that is used for non-Jews in the last days, coming up to the Jews and grabbing the kanaf, grabbing the corner of the garment where the tzitzit are, but it says to grab it strongly. So whenever you move forward in the commandments, number one, know where you're going. Know what you're doing. Know where you're going. Have a plan. I want to learn to do the Shabbat. I want to learn to do the Sabbath meal. I want to learn to do the Kabbalat Shabbat songs, whatever it is. Then have a plan and act. Go forward in it. Take step into the water and move in that direction. Seek others in your own area that you can form a community with. Do not let distance be a barrier. In fact, today, with internet, and by the way, a caution on internet, don't read everything on the internet, especially in this movement. Too many voices cause confusion. Don't read on the internet more than you're reading in the Word of God. You're going to mess yourself up. But if you use the internet or the email correctly, you can have fellowship with friends and communicate with friends and make plans with friends in order to get around this community problem. Now, how much time do I have left? Because I want to change. How much time do I have? All right. Good. I want to talk about another aspect of community, and that's on a larger scale. In one way, you can come to the gathering that we have here at Sukkot, and you can be very discouraged. Because there's so much dissension in so many places. And there's so many opinions, and there's so much, I don't know, in one way there's a smorgasbord of teachings, and that can be discouraging. And so you can come out of this going, what should I believe? I don't know who to follow. That's a simple one. You don't want to follow me. You don't want to follow Tim. You don't want to follow Dean. You don't want to follow John. You want to follow God. Okay? And you have to get to that point to where that you can tell what is good and what is not. It's going to take a lot of discernment. But you can sit here and you can go, my goodness, how are we ever going to resolve all these issues? How are we ever going to have any order come out of this? We have several problems. Let me tell you, one of the big problems is communication. One of the big problems is actually the words we're using. I say one thing and you hear it different. Because your definitions are different than my definitions. You say something to me and I hear it different than what you meant because my definitions are different from your definitions. Now this is something that's going on. It's very widespread. And I don't mean to say this as a criticism. And in fact, to tell you the truth, I am blown away by this gathering. I think Tim and Angie and their staff have done a remarkable job, and each year it's better. What I'm saying is that wherever you go in the country, the same type of things are going on. It is where we are in this movement. And that's to be expected. We are a young movement. And growing up is never easy. Childhood is a difficult time. And it's full of tears. It's full of disappointments. And that's before you become a teenager. Then when you become a teenager, not only is it a hard time for you and a frightening time, it is miserable for your parents. I hate to say this, we have not yet reached the teenage years. We're still in the little kid years. We've got a lot of growing to go, but a very good sign is that we are having so much dissension. We are having so much discussion. You have to have a certain bit of maturity before you can actually enter into that. So this is a good thing. Excuse me. I want to talk to you about something in Israel. How many of you, I asked this before I've been over to Israel. A number of you. You need to go. You need to go as soon as you can. Make sure when you go with a good group. There are many good groups that you can go with. We're taking a tour, and I think we're a good group. We're taking a tour in March if you're interested. But you need to go to Israel. Now, out of you people that have been to Israel, how many of you have been there for extended stay? Several of you have been there for an extended stay. And how many of you have been around the Orthodox world when you were there? A lot. Somewhat immersed in the Orthodox world. One of the things you find out is that in the Orthodox world, that there is tremendous dissension. There is this group over here doesn't like that group over there. And it, in fact, a few years ago, was so bad that if one group was in a room and another group entered, the first group would get up and leave. But it changed. Israel has changed. Let me tell you how it's changed. It changed as a result of several things happening. One was the Holy Temple. The Holy Temple. A movement began back in 1967. It began anew in 1988 towards rebuilding the temple. And different Orthodox groups from different persuasions of Orthodoxy began to see in their hearts, in their minds, every day an observant Jew prays a prayer called Yehi Ratzon, that the Holy Temple would be rebuilt. But most of the people pray this prayer, but they don't actually believe it'll happen. Just like for years and years and years throughout the world, Jews prayed for the return to Israel. But in the early 1900s, when it began, most people thought, oh, those people are crazy. It'll never happen in our lifetime. And today, not only do we have the state of Israel, we're past the 50th anniversary. What God sets his hand to, that comes about. But everybody said they're crazy. So everybody said about all of these various rabbis and their students, they're crazy, it'll never happen. But this movement began to grow, and it began to grow, and it began to grow, and these different Orthodox rabbis from these different groups, they couldn't stand each other, had a common ground. And that common ground was the Holy Temple. And they knew for the temple to be established, they had to have a Sanhedrin. You cannot establish the temple without the Sanhedrin, because only the Sanhedrin has the authority to appoint a Kohen Gadol, a high priest. The Kohen Gadol is the one that has the authority to appoint the Kohen who will slaughter the red heifer, and the red heifer you have to have before you can do anything. So you have to have a Sanhedrin. And so, rather than talk about their differences, they talked about their common ground. And that common ground was the Holy Temple. I was in Jerusalem. I think it was 5 years ago, I think. And I had a tour group. And we were going to the southern steps of the Temple Mount. Now, I have a friend. Her name is Orit Pelek. And she is a very upcoming archaeologist. She has just recently achieved her doctorate degree. But she was the personal assistant to some of Israel's greatest archaeologists, Ilat Mazar, who's doing the excavation of the city of David, David's palace. Also, she worked in Tiberias, and I'm going to tell you about that in just a second. And she worked with the great Ehud Netzer, who discovered at Herodian King Herod's tomb. And Orit's very knowledgeable, and because she worked with Ilat Mazar at the Southern Steps, I would hire her to come and speak to my group, to take them and show them all of these things that she could do so much better than me. So Rabbi Richman from the Temple Institute had been over here in the States, and he ended up with more stuff to take home than what he had luggage for. So he actually left the suitcase and asked me if I'd bring it over next time I came. So I'm going to take the opportunity while Orit's got my group, I don't have to worry about them, to run up to his office. So I go up to his office and I come in and he hands me this paper from Marut Sheva, and it states that the Sanhedrin had been established the evening before in Tiberias. Now I'm going to tell you a story about it real quick. I don't want to take a lot of time with this, but it was actually a miracle God. It was a miracle God on several levels. Here's the first miracle. The last Sanhedrin that met was disbanded by the Roman government in about, in the 6th century, the 500s. And for that reason, this was at Tiberias, where they were meeting and they were disbanded. For that reason, they went back to Tiberias to reestablish the Sanhedrin. Now, I have been praying about the Sanhedrin coming to be. I have been bugging every rabbi I knew about when do you think it'll happen. And nobody knew. Nobody had any idea. And lo and behold, I'm in Jerusalem when it's happening, and I had no idea. I was caught totally by surprise. I could feel my socks unraveling from the top going down. The way it happened is even the rabbis of the Sanhedrin that became members that evening of the Sanhedrin, most of the rabbis didn't know they were establishing it then. It was kept a secret even from them. So all of a sudden, a car shows up at their house, says, Gideon, we're going to Tiberias. And they knew at that point the Sanhedrin is being established. It was that secret. Now, before this, months and months before this, the archaeological team working up at Tiberias had discovered the building, the last building that the Sanhedrin had met in. But, and they confirmed it. They knew that it was the chambers of the Sanhedrin, but they didn't tell anybody. They kept it secret. If you've ever been, worked in scholastics, and research, one of the cardinal rules is you don't tell anybody your research. You don't let anybody see your research because they will publish it before you and they're the ones that will get the funding. That's the way it works, right, Asha? Okay, that's the way it works. So they kept it secret and they are going to make an announcement that they have found the last chambers of the Sanhedrin in Tiberias. Well, it turned out that the very day that the new Sanhedrin was established was the same day the archaeologists made their announcements, both in the city of Tiberias, within blocks of each other, just about an hour apart. Neither knew that the other was doing this. You see the hand of God. That's a miracle, isn't it? That's when you know it was God. But let me tell you, a greater miracle, that we had 70 rabbis from 70 different groups that 2 years before could not sit in the same room together and discuss anything, sitting around a table, and they have formed a Sanhedrin. Because they believe that it's the last days. They believe that the temple is going to be built. And rather than their differences rise up, their common ground paved the way. But, around Jerusalem, I was asking various people the next day, what do you think about this new Sanhedrin? And people were very skeptical. Most of them said, I don't think it'll work. Others said, who do these guys think they are? All types of things. But something happened. The government, our government, and the Israeli government, and the European government said to Israel, you have to disband Gush Katif. You have to disband Gush Katif. And the Orthodox world was inflamed. It was inflamed. Voices from the Orthodox world began to rise up and they spoke against the actions of the government. They spoke against the United States. They spoke against Great Britain and the others that were involved in this thing. And they became the voices not of their own Orthodox groups, but of a new term. It changed. What they had, what formed, is what we call the Torah world. In Israel today, and the fight continues for Jerusalem, and the fight continues for Judea, Samaria, instead of thinking of a Sanhedrin that is divided, and thinking of an orthodoxy that is divided, they have become a group, together. With differences, but they all believe that they are to hold this land, to occupy this land, to establish Orthodox communities that will observe the commandments of God together. In other words, they have found a common ground. We are going to experience the same thing. We can work towards it. We can move towards it. But when it comes, it will be an act of God. And the differences that we have are going to fall to the side. The common ground that we have, a love for Israel, an expectation of the return, the coming of the Messiah, the commandments of God, these are going to come to the front, and our differences are going to move to the side. I have, I want to tell you about a couple meetings. And from this, I want to draw some principles. I have, what I do primarily is work on research for the temple, and my research involves the structures, the buildings, the measurements, and how the buildings and the ceremonies function. Now, we go and we meet primarily with two rabbis, which are going to be Rabbi Chaim Richman. Many of you know who he is or have met him, seen him, from the Temple Institute, and his boss, which is Rabbi Israel Oriel. Now, Rabbi Oriel is the leading expert around the world concerning the temple, rabbinic expert, and he is also one of the elders of the Sanhedrin. He doesn't speak English, he only speaks Hebrew. And we go into these meetings. My Hebrew is not good enough that I can conduct the meetings in Hebrew by long shot. So Rabbi Richman, well, we have a meeting the day before with Rabbi Richman, and then the next day we have the meeting with Rabbi Oriel, and sometimes that goes into 2 days. And he translates. Now, when I go into these meetings, what I have to do, and you have to hear what I'm saying, what I want you to do for a moment is I want you to stop being a foreigner. I want you to stop being, forget the term, a Gentile for a moment. And I want you to hear what I'm going to say with, let's say, Jewish ears. Because whenever I go in to talk to the rabbis, I can't go in and sit down like I'm talking to a pastor at a church. The rabbis are easier, by the way, by a long shot. Because their way of talking is so different from me talking with you. You're talking questions. Everything is a question, and we argue. Have you ever seen a yeshiva? A yeshiva, you have the head of the yeshiva comes in and he asks the students a question, the Talmudim a question. Then he leaves the room. They break off into pairs, and what do? It's called pilpul. The word pulpit comes from the word pilpul. Do you know what pilpul means? Peppered argument. Peppered argument. Whenever I go in before the rabbis, I argue with them. I argue with them, they argue with me. Now, I have the greatest respect for them, and they have respect for me. And I am not angry in my argument, and they're not angry at me in my argument. This is the way that we arrive at truth. This is the way that we test it, we try it. This is a skill that we need to learn. We need to learn and employ this skill among ourselves. You need that skill in your marriage. You need to be able to communicate, but you need to be able to argue, but you don't hate each other. You're not mad at each other. You love each other, but you are going to work these things out to where that we grow and we prosper. That is community. That is where we can come together and there can be an opinion over here and another opinion over here and we can sit and we can argue these things, but it brings direction. It brings progress. It brings where we're coming forward. You should not leave where you are in a whirlwind. one of the rabbis, our last meeting. These meetings have been very, very successful. They've been very successful. We've gone in and we've been able to resolve a number of difficulties from the text, the contradictions from the text, and we were able to give a solution to these, and the rabbis received these. Sometimes they, I'll give you an example. In 2006, we went in and we had a meeting and we convinced the rabbis of everything that we were presenting except for one thing, which was the measurement for the cubit. There was more than one cubit used in the Holy Temple or the inner courtyards. So, we left, we came back 2 years later, and we did another report, and in that report, we convinced them of all of this. We argued it, we presented it, we argued it, and it went very well. We get to the end of this, and Rabbi Richmond stands up, and it's gone just remarkable. I mean, we've met for hours. We have done presentation. We've argued for hours. And Rabbi Ariel is totally convinced of what we presented. So I'm really excited. I'm floating high and everything. Rabbi Richmond stands up and he says this. And I hope this doesn't sound puffed up or anything. But he says, I don't understand how you're able to find all of these things. And what I said to him is, it's very simple. I'm not in your box. Now, do you understand what I'm saying? There's a lot of discussion in this room. A lot of the problem that we have in our discussion is we have different terminologies and definitions. We have very little tolerance for each other. We need to have where we come into these meetings to where that we are studying the scriptures more than we're talking. Okay, so that's going to be a problem that we already have coming in, but let's change this before our next year. But we have our box, somebody has a different box. And this is sometimes the problem between us is we can't understand, we can't look out of our own box. We see everything by our own perimeters, and so if we can all of a sudden stop and listen, this is one of the things I admire about the rabbis, at least these rabbis, is that they didn't throw the baby out with the bathwater. They heard what we said. They said, I disagree with this part of it. They put everything on the back burner. We came back and we presented to it again, and this time they saw it. It's a process. You and I, to establish a community, we have to employ these processes. Okay? So where do we go from here? What are our expectations? I'm going to tell you where I am. I'm encouraged. I'm encouraged. I love coming here. I love coming here. I love seeing so many of you that have been friends from the past. I meet new people and friends for tomorrow. And that excites me. I love seeing the growth in the body. I love seeing the Sukkot this year is different from last year. To me, down at the campground, and not only the campground, but around by the hotels, I'm starting to see more Sukkot. Y'all notice that? You know what I'm saying? The booths. People are putting up more Sukkot. We're having more and more of the discussions, even though they're turbulent, some of the things that people are starting to discuss, nobody discussed a few years ago. So I'm excited to see the growth. I think that in the next few years, I think that we're going to grow beyond our wildest imaginations. I think we'll grow in numbers. My prayer is that we'll grow in wisdom, knowledge, and spirituality. Thank you. Oh, questions.
Thank you. What was the interlinear book that you had mentioned?
It's published by Art Scroll. It's called The Schattenstein. This is a one volume for the book of Genesis. You could get one for each of the five books of the Torah. And they have just come out with a one volume Schattenstein. The Schattensteins are interlinears. And they have the five books of the Torah. They have the book of Psalms. They have the book of Echa or Lamentations. I think the book of Ruth. You can get a siddur for the festivals and a siddur for the weekdays. You can get a Rosh Hashanah Machzor, a Yom Kippur Machzor. You can get the Birkat HaMazon. Debbie's got some of these down at our table, I think. Do you have some more left? But they're interlinears. The Birkat HaMazon is the grace after the meal.
I'm not a very good speller. How do you spell shot time?
Schattenstein. S-C-H-O-T-T-E-N-S-T-E-I-N. And I'm going to give this to Debbie to have down at our table so that y'all can look at it. It's not for sale, okay? But I just brought it to, for you to see. And the other thing that I mentioned was Torah Educational Software. There is a series called Word by Word. And I highly encourage using the little test in there.
Hi, Joe. Thank you for your presentation. It was very, very well thought out, very well put. The question that I have for you is for clarification. And if the question that I am going to ask you is a yes, I have a few short questions after that. You laid out a very good plan for how to make, learn Hebrew and make our homes more godly and our children more godly with inside the home. And then to get together with other folks during the, appointed times to come together in community so that we could be with one another and to further our walk in the commandments. What I want to know is, and this isn't the only reason for it, but a portion of it, as we come together with families together, is part of that process to help each family grow in the areas where they need to grow, because this family may be blessed with discernment and not being too talkative, where this family is too talkative, which leads to further ungodliness, and you learn from one another. If the answer to that question is yes, I got two short ones after that, or yes and no.
It is yes, but let me make a comment on that.
Okay.
One of the things that we're having to deal with in my daughter, now we have a number of kids, and we have made mistakes in the past with our kids. What we're trying to do is not make the same mistakes with our remaining child that's at home, that's under our care, and with our grandchildren. In other words, we want to learn by our mistakes and we want to grow. But here's one of the things that she's 11 years old right now. She's a dive. She knew I was talking about her. But, Debbie is talking to her about dress, about modest dress. Now, so we have her in a dress, you know, a dress that comes down and then sleeves and so forth, and we emphasize this. But she watches television, and she sees the other kids and even some of her sisters, because we didn't get them early enough, and they've grown up and they're doing their own thing when we come together. And there are other children that their parents are starting to deal with the same things. It becomes a reinforcement to my child to see other children dressing the same modest way. And that's one of the things that is an objective, is to come in here and draw off the other families. Now, you have to be careful because you don't want it to be your time to come together to be critical, to be where you're criticizing. You plan your things to be positive and look for that.
So we can learn the positivity, and that is a great real-life example right there, because if you were not dressing godly, you want to dress godly because you feel ashamed when you're in front of people who are dressing godly. So in saying that, you come together, and if God is holy and sovereign, and he's putting all this together from outside of creation, and one of the things I worry about is everybody going different places, a couple years here, a couple years there, couple years over there. Is he not so holy and sovereign that the people that are in my area right now have what it is that I need, and they have what it is that I need, and I have what it is that they need to be able to bring us together? And then when we come together on a big scale like this, we're all of one mind, and we've learned how to argue, debate, have fun, light teasing in godliness.
Yes. Yes, by all means. That if we could catch a vision for this, that we could go out of here and start making little groups all over the place. I'm not talking about making organizations, making congregations, setting up structures and so forth. I'm not talking about something so complex and complicated as that. I'm talking about if you are alone, I know that in a meeting this big, there are going to be people in your state, in your area, that you can make plans to get together, you can correspond, you can come together, and then we grow as a community out there, and then when we come together in the larger community, like at Sukkot, we all benefit. Is that what you were saying? Yes. Exactly. Anything else? There's one back there. And probably we should stop. I know that there's other activities that are going.
Can you elaborate on the value you put of being in a room and arguing with people as opposed to the value of writing down your understanding so that people can look at it and evaluate it and have a basis for really knowing what you're saying as opposed to what they heard you say?
Well, that is a very valid thing, is to write down and concisely put. And I don't want to take that away. One of the great things that I've always appreciated, for instance, is Dean and Susan's magazine, Hebrew Roots. If you're not getting it, by the way, you need to. And he's done a great job of writing down these type of things, and, you know, others can do the same thing. My point is this, is that we have developed the art of arguing. We have not developed the art of arguing right. Okay? And so we need to argue these points. They do need to be argued. But it needs to be argued in love. It needs to be argued without causing where we're going different directions, but that where we are working towards finding the truth. And that finding of the truth might not be something that you find within a 1 week period. That was why I gave you the illustration that I met with the rabbis. We met with the rabbis in 2006. It was 2008 before we came back on the same argument and presented more information to them. And they saw it at that time. But the whole thing was, it did not destroy our friendship. It did not destroy our fellowship. It did not destroy in any way. We get up from these meetings where we've been arguing over these points, and we're as good of friends as we were. My wife and I, let me tell you, my wife told me this morning. A friend of mine told me the same thing this morning. They had talked last night. But a marriage requires two things. One is communication, and the second is arguing. Now, it requires this. You have to argue. But that arguing, how you come out of those arguments, is all the difference in whether you have a really working marriage or you have a disaster. Because in a good marriage, you do argue, but you love each other. I appreciate my very good arguments with my wife. She appreciates the arguments she has with me, and we grow from them, and we actually look forward to them. We sharpen each other with these. And that was my point. But yes, by all means, write down the things that you see and put it there where you can analyze it, you can refine it, you can work on it, and others can see what is being communicated. Okay. I need to let it go so that people can go to their next function activity. Thank you.